TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. TCL, America's fastest growing TV brand. It's Raised by Wolves.
Yes, it is. Welcome in, Raised by Wolves. Danny Cunningham, Dane Moore coming at you on Thursday, September 12th. Training camp is another day closer every day that we go. Media day set for September 30th. Wolves camp open up October 1st down in Mankato, the 1st and 2nd, and then they come home and we don't have to travel anymore, Dane, so that'll be great.
It's coming up quick, you know. It's the NFL starts, and then it's just boom. It sneaks up on you. You like think the NFL kind of like owns time there for a while, but I mean, I think it's time to start. It's time to start talking about basketball. It's time to start thinking about how the West shakes out and everything.
Yeah. I'm ready. I'm ready for it, and I know you are too. And
where
I know
does
we're
it
not
stack
alone.
Up for you? So you're NBA number one. Then are you NFL too?
Probably NFL or college football. I'm a big college football guy. Yeah. Which a previous job I covered the University of Wisconsin college football, and that's something I grew up loving. I love college football. I played college football at the Division II level, so I'm a big college football guy. NFL, baseball, and obviously at Score North, I talk about just about everything. Where the only thing I really write about is the NBA, but I talk on podcasts and radio and all that stuff about everything else as well. So I tried to be a multi-talented type person,
utility player.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I tried to do.
I'm one-dimensional.
For now, we'll see what we can do.
I don't know.
You never say never, Dane.
I've given up.
You never
Focus,
know.
Focus, niche. That's
you never
plan.
Know. So what I wanted to talk about, what we were talking about a little bit before the mic came on, is actually something along the lines of what someone else wrote today. John Krasinski in The Athletic wrote a profile on Gerson Rosas and how they're going to keep taking swings. This summer, they took a swing at D'Angelo Russell. They missed. That was what their summer plan was. That's what they were going for. It was pretty obvious to everyone really across the NBA what their plan was. It didn't work out, and you have to move on. That was what they wanted to do this summer. It didn't work out. Try again next summer. Try again during the season, whatever it is. But it's interesting to me who the next star that's going to come available could be, because Bradley Beal's the hottest name out there. That's the name that gets thrown around for – it certainly gets thrown around here. It gets thrown around in every other market that could potentially trade for somebody. It's, oh, well, Bradley Beal's going to become available. Before this, it was Anthony Davis, and just that's the name right now. But I'm curious who the name that the Wolves are going to get is going to be. Who's going to be the next one that's actually available?
Well, I think it's important to kind of narrow the focus as much as we can. We list all the best players in the league because honestly, who knows, man? Like this offseason just happened. Like things can happen. Other players can be made available, but the things that decrease the likelihood, in my opinion, of a player coming are the contract they're on, and then I would say kind of the position they play.
Sure,
obviously, like if Nikola Jokic became available, the Timberwolves would not be in the market for that. That wouldn't happen.
Could you imagine how wild that would be if they were, though?
that wouldn't work, actually. Like, I don't think
it'd be interesting, though.
It would be interesting. Save that for 2K. So I guess the way I narrow it down is I kind of draw the line at like 30-year-old players, and I'm looking at lead ball handlers.
Yeah.
For the guys that it could be. And it's because that's where D'Angelo Russell would have fallen into like that phylum of guys. But the thing is now, Russell, like Jamal Murray, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, Devin Booker, and CJ McCollum, those are kind of like the main name guys there. But all of them are now on 5-year contracts with Murray just got the 5-year extension. Kyrie Irving just signed for 4 years. D'Angelo Russell, 4 years. Ben Simmons just signed 5 years. Booker begins a 5-year deal this year. McCollum, 5 years. So those guys, I think, inherently become less likely, right?
Yeah. Although, I will say this. Some guys can be more volatile than others. Like, after the 2017 finals, no one would have told... If you would have told me in June of 2017 that Kyrie Irving would request a trade, I think a lot of people would have called you crazy. So that has to be taken into some account. It's not a big deal because that's not the commonplace. That's not common occurrence, but it is possible.
To me, it kind of feels like with those big guys that are locked up long term, if they're going to really wrangle their way out of any of those places, I would assume there's just an element of them they'd really want to be going to probably two things, a big market and a real contender.
Yeah.
And maybe the big market thing isn't as big of a deal. And maybe the Wolves are a little bit more of a contender a year or two down the road.
Sure.
But those six guys, again, Jamal Murray, Kyrie Irving, D'Angelo Russell, Ben Simmons, Devin Booker, CJ McCollum, they become less likely for me if we're, even if we were assuming someday they get one of these guys, it becomes less likely. So you got something?
And I think the market thing, I don't want to say it's irrelevant, but in trade discussions, a lot of time the player doesn't get to decide.
Sure.
Like, to bring up Kyrie Irving again, his list actually did include Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. It was like Minnesota, Brooklyn, San Antonio, and the Knicks.
New York,
but the Celtics were not on his list.
Those lists are so weird.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. But yeah. The team, whoever has this guy, player X, that ends up trading them, is not going to trade them to a market just because it's bigger. They're going to trade them to the best offer that they get. And that's going to be a much bigger factor instead of like, oh, well, this market's bigger than that one, so we're going to send them there. They're going
to particularly with these guys who are locked up.
Yes,
they're locked up. Like, it's different than D'Angelo Russell. Like, D'Angelo Russell was a restricted free agent, meaning in his process, there was going to be a trade involved in it, an assign and trade. But ultimately, he had the autonomy to be able to choose which team he went to, and obviously chose Golden State over Minnesota. But as you mentioned, those guys are locked up. It's a trade. If they want out, the teams have the prerogative to trade them where they get the best offer. Maybe that is Minnesota.
Sure, could be.
I just kind of start to move on from that group or just throw a lower percentage chance on it. And then the next group of guys I go to, it's a small list. It's Victor Oladipo and it's Bradley Beal. And both of those guys are on two-year deals. Oladipo's 2 years, $42 million left. Bradley Beal, 2 years, $56 million. And they I would say they belong in that same group as the main guys. They're just on a smaller contract.
In terms of talent, yes.
In terms
of
talent.
I think you can make the argument that Bradley Beal might be maybe the second or third best guy on those lists.
Yeah.
There. But like you said, the contract
dictates. I might say the best.
Yeah, sure. The contract dictates where you're at.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And so I think that's just a part of this calculation. We obviously got to see some stuff with Oladipo, but those to me are the two most likely immediate impact guys who would be star caliber lead ball handlers who are under 30 years old. If I'm like siphoning it down to that, those are the two, because then after them, when we're looking at guys who are good lead ball handlers, we move into a group of guys who are just at the end of their rookie contract. And what I have is Lonzo Ball, De'Aaron Fox, DeJounte Murray, Derek White, Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young. And it's
hard to see one of those guys moving before with the team having so much team control left.
Exactly. Because they're going to go into the restricted free agency. But again, the example to use there, even though it seems like, man, I can't see the Kings moving on from De'Aaron Fox.
They still are the Kings.
Well, they're still the Kings, and the way it would happen would be a Brooklyn situation, you know, where they have two other stars who want to come in and it doesn't fit, you know. It would be that sort of thing. So I would look at those six guys, and then the other one that I had, and it was like, it was really what I was going to be looking at come next offseason, was Caris LeVert.
I was going to bring him up.
He was going to be the one.
I was thinking about this scenario as I was getting ready for work this morning. Mm-hmm. I was in my apartment. I was getting ready, eating breakfast. I'm like, you know, I wonder what it would be like if Caris LeVert didn't sign that extension with Brooklyn this offseason.
He would have been the D'Angelo Russell. I mean, it would have been a very similar thing. It would have been a restricted free agent, just like he was. And Brooklyn would be faced with the question of, is this where we invest our resources in?
Yeah.
Now, that said, I think Caris LeVert kind of falls into the Oladipo Beal bin, which I would put as a little bit more likely because he's not on a 4 or 5 year max contract.
Yeah.
Like those first six guys. And then I would remove him from this rookie list. But I think you're kind of narrowing it down to those handful of guys. And it's really hard to picture any of them as likely. But as Rosas would tell you, it's the accumulation of the percentages. It's like, all right, well, we got a 4% chance of something crazy happening where one of those guys locked up on a max contract comes. You have that. And then maybe Oladipo and Beal, it's like 11% or something. And then it's one of those rookie guys is like 14%. And you kind of put it all together and they have a 1 in 3 shot at some point of landing one of those. I don't know if those are the percentages or not, but
math.
It's not just one guy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a whiteboard or like Google Docs somewhere that they have where it's, you know, these are going to be the quote-unquote next D'Angelo Russells that we can pursue. And I don't think they're lying. I think That is absolutely the plan, is to put together a core of a team and a roster construction shaped by their salary in place to be able to stay as lean as possible to land one of these guys eventually, because if they don't, they're not going to win a championship.
No. And I have no doubt that that's their plan. Their plan is to acquire another star. They haven't been – it's actually really refreshing to hear them just not be shy about that. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of franchises would be like, you know what? We want to do the best with what we have. We want to develop guys. We want to – and Gerson Russ is like, no, we are looking for another star. We are hunting for another star.
Which is
– it's refreshing.
It's refreshing. But do you know what's interesting about like the shadow of that is – is that to get one of these guys or that guy, whenever it is, there's a lot. There will be a lot of overhaul to be had because you're going to need to trade a bunch of assets to
and
get
you,
that
you,
guy.
You do put a lot of pressure on yourself to get it done because it's not as if you're setting yourself up for. You're not setting yourself up for failure here, but you're setting a high expectation on yourself to that you're saying we are going to get a star at some point. We don't know who it is. We don't know how we're going to get them, but we are going to get a star at some point.
And I'm just saying, getting a star, and Rosas would say too, is expensive, and you are going to need to give up assets. And that just doesn't mean first-round picks.
Mm-mm.
That isn't just in and of itself going to get the job done, because they're going to need to use some picks to create financial flexibility, whether that be, you know, trading to get off of, you know, Jeff Teague, Gorgui Dieng, Andrew Wiggins, something like that. You're going to not only need to use assets in that capacity, but you're going to need to use assets in another capacity to acquire the player. And that's why... As great as it would be to, you know, start picturing a future where it's Cat and Covington who are this awesome pair, and then you kind of have Culver and Okogie down there. Like, man.
But, like, what is that?
I'm just saying, people love Covington. I love Covington. I think he helps Cat a lot. But that is the most likely piece. If we're just looking at assets on this team, Covington would be the most likely asset that isn't a draft pick that would be able to be traded so as to create the financial flexibility to be able to go get a Bradley Beal and a Jamal Murray. So what I'm saying is you're not just copy pasting one of these stud under 30-year-old lead ball handlers onto this team with Covington and with the other things you have. It's going to cost you something, and I would guess Robert Covington would be one of those pieces.
I think you can make the argument he is one of the best trade assets, non-draft pick trade assets in the NBA because of one, he's a really talented basketball player. And I've been guilty of this as much as anybody, forgetting how good he is because he hasn't played since December. But his contract's perfect, too. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. He's on a very team-friendly contract, and that matters.
And I'm just, you know, fast forward to the trade deadline or something, and you're the Rockets, you're the Nuggets, you're one of those teams who has had a strong first 55 games this season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what is the archetype of a player that pushes you over the edge? I mean, it's a stud defender who can also impact your offense in roles. It's an elite role player. Mm-hmm. And that's what Robert Covington is.
Very elite, yeah.
I don't want to, like, you know, pack Covington's bags for him or anything, but I'm just saying the echo, the shadow, the whatever of Rosas saying, we are going to acquire a star, we're going to acquire a star. Some of the echo is that could mean the trading of Robert Covington or, to a lesser degree, an Okogie or a Culver or some of those other just assets on the team, because they are, in terms of the roster, they're asset poor.
Yes.
Because you have Wiggins, who's making more than his market value, Jang, Teague. You know, it's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah, and they're on the other side of the coin. They're asset neutral for draft picks. They have all their own first-round picks. They don't have anyone else's, at least not to my knowledge. Right?
That's meaningful, and I mean,
it helps, but you're not in the best position out there. It's not like you are.
You're saying more. Yeah.
It's not like you're the Thunder, where you have everyone's first round draft picks for the rest of time.
Think that's an interesting part of this too, where we start talking about those guys who are on the rookie deal, like the De'Aaron Fox, the Derek White, Donovan Mitchell, Trae Young.
Mm-hmm.
Like when those guys do hit the trade market for some weird reason. You got New Orleans with a boatload of additional non-roster assets, and you have the Thunder who are going to do that too. And if you're running the Thunder or if you're running the Pelicans, that's exactly what I'm looking for as an under 25-year-old future star.
I certainly trust the people running both those organizations too. Right. I think Sam Presti is terrific. I think David Griffin's one of the best around.
Right. It's just
and
so,
that's not a slight at Gerson Rosas in any stretch of the imagination. I think that those two are two of the top.
It's just the point is the whiteboard that the Timberwolves have with the list of these names.
Mm-hmm.
So do all the other young teams who have won one star, a Zion, a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, you know, that have that piece, they're looking to acquire their number two or 1B, like just as much there. So it's going to be a bidding process, and that's why I believe if something does happen, it's going to be something weird, like the D'Angelo Russell situation. What it was weird,
yeah,
like that. It, the way the mechanics of that all played out, it, all of a sudden they're like, yeah, we actually don't want this 23-year-old all-star anymore.
Let me ask you this: at what point does it shift from they're going to try and get someone in trade to they're going after a free agent? At what point does it shift to that? Because I know obviously it's tough with the contracts, and next summer it gets a little bit easier because Jeff Teague's gone. Gorgui Dieng becomes more tradable as an expiring, but Andrew Wiggins is still around. The summer after that, Andrew's contract is bad, but that's it.
Yeah, it's just when you just talk about pursuing a free agent in the traditional sense, you're going to need cap space. And for that player of that caliber, you're going to need about $30 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, even...
But at what point does that become a possibility?
Well, I mean, you need... It's not even Gorgui Dieng being off the books. You need Andrew Wiggins off the books, too. Or that amount of money, next season, like even once Teague expires and Vonleh expires and Napier expires and Trevion Graham and Jordan Bell, all of them expire, they still have $105 million in.
It's a lot of money.
Dedicated.
Yeah,
and that's to 7 players. Like, so you got to fill out the rest of the roster. There's cap holds on those spots. I mean, they're not going into next offseason with cap space, even though Teague comes off the books.
Oh no. No,
I guess my long way of answering your question. It's not next year.
No,
it's not next year.
It's 2021 at the soonest.
At the soonest. Yes.
And even then, next year's free agency class isn't exactly what you want to load up for. Like, I don't know that there's a guy in next year's free agency class because Anthony Davis.
And it was Caris LeVert. It was.
It was Caris LeVert. Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
One, never coming here. Two, not leaving the Lakers. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy in that class. Other than that, it's like Caris LeVert would have been fun, but.
Right. Draymond signed.
Even then, I wouldn't want Draymond. At that age, for that price, I wouldn't want. I would not want to sign Draymond as a free agent.
I guess that just is. Which for the next 24 months till 2021. The way to look at acquiring that star is through a trade.
Yeah.
And, again, that just narrows the focus down, and I think it brings us back to that list where those are kind of the guys, if you're going to focus, on a lead ball handler, you can make another list for, small forwards or something.
Yeah. Look, at what point would you consider it being a wing? Someone other than a lead ball handler? Because it's a lead ball handler is really important, as we've seen.
Well, they have.
But who's on that list?
It's with the way that the team is constructed. In 2021, they have 6 players under contract. 5 of them are wings.
Yeah.
And the 6th is Karl Anthony Towns.
How many of those 5 would get traded to bring in someone?
Though? Yeah, I mean.
Because that has to be a flip side. If you are trading for a wing, you could be sending out 2, maybe 3 wings to get him. And then it makes a lot more sense. It is really congested right now on paper. But I think that if we can think about it even a little bit, I'm sure Gerson Rosas and that front office has.
Yeah, and I think what we saw in Houston, that was the Houston ethos, is it didn't really matter what position they played. It made star available. Yeah, like sign us up. So
they had a lead ball handler and they traded for another all-star lead ball handler. And then they traded that one for a different one and they signed Eric Gordon.
Yes, exactly. So maybe I shouldn't be honing in as much on those guards, point guards, or like 1.5s.
Sure.
But it seems more likely to me, and
certainly.
It seems particularly when you consider Karl Anthony Towns, like it's going to be a pick and roll initiator. It's going to be a dynamic isolation player that's going to unleash him in a way more than I actually kind of think they already have the small forward on the roster that maximizes a lot of what Cat does in Robert Covington.
Yeah.
Which is weird. And are kind of talking out of both sides of our mouth, like, oh, you got this guy, so you got to pick and choose a little bit, but, and I would need to look at a list of those guys a little bit more. I really feel like it will be a lead ball handler if they do it.
Because the only position I'm comfortable is in ruling out is a big. They're not going to trade for a star big.
Yeah.
I'm comfortable ruling that out, but I'm not comfortable ruling out a wing. Like, I think it's a possibility. I don't know who it's going to be, but I think it's a possibility.
I just think it would mean that Wiggins and Covington are gone, and those would be difficult things. I mean, Culver, too.
You could play Culver at the two, though, and you could bring someone else in at the three. And yeah. presumably Covington is part of the trade package, and I don't know what happens with Wiggins. But there's right. there is an avenue to get there.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's
right.
a complicated avenue. Just like D'Angelo Russell, getting him here mm-hmm. was going to be a complicated complicated street to drive down.
Right. It's a big whiteboard.
Yes.
It's a big whiteboard.
There's a lot of space on there.
I'm interested to see, like, how much that eventual pursuit that has no real date associated to it.
Yeah.
I mean, we threw 2021 on it. Like, how much of that does that cloud or distract us from basketball for the next 2 years? You know, if that's the eventual goal,
yeah.
then what are we doing here? And I know we're doing things here, and I know it's important to it. Establish an identity, establish a style of play to maximize cap, but there will be an element of these next 2 years or so that are just somewhat hollow because
I think that it's going to be kind of a keep the faith thing for a lot of fans too, mm-hmm. is that, well, yeah, they look like this now, but what if they add Bradley Beal?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if and when they get that next star, they're going to be really good because they might be.
Right.
So I think it's going to be, while what we're doing here might be different than what a lot of fans are doing here. A lot of fans mm-hmm. are going to be recklessly speculating about if and when that might happen while we're going yeah. to be actually watching basketball, while right. certainly still thinking about right. what would this team look like with if Bradley yeah. Beal were here or if De'Aaron Fox wants out of Sacramento or whatever that is. So that's the interesting thing because we're going to be and
they do fuse together because
yeah,
it's
certainly
you know to what degree does Karl Anthony Towns fit into this idyllic situation that Rosas and Saunders are putting together? I mean, we're going to learn that this year, and that will help define what the type of stars that would best maximize him. And I think that's on both sides of the floor. We're gonna learn so much about Cat this year.
Yeah.
And the more we know about Cat, the more we know what this team needs to be a true contender in the league. So, I don't know.
Let me ask you that. What do you think we are going to learn about him? Because I agree with you that we're going to learn about Carl. But what do you think we're going to learn? And what's the one thing that you're most interested to learn?
It's kind of a tie for me, but I think offense is more interesting, so I'll go there.
I don't think many would disagree.
it's where he's going to be the fulcrum of this offense. And the way I've kind of written about it is we know that fulcrum is going to be kind of around the nail, the free throw line extended to above the break. But there's kind of two different ways to use a five in that capacity. And, you know, the more traditional one we see in the NBA today is the high screen pick and pop, pick and roll, putting pressure on the rim in that sort of capacity, which, I mean, everyone, the example I kind of used was like Nikola Vucevic is like that for the Magic. And then the other option, Cat would be better than Vucevic at that.
Yeah.
But the other option is Nikola Jokic.
Mm-hmm.
He's the fulcrum of the Denver offense from the nail in a distribution type of way where it's so much about off ball cutting and it's so much about even getting screens set for him. And I think we'll see that. I think we'll learn that early on. I mean, 10 games into the season, we'll be like, oh, this is the way they've decided to use Cat mm-hmm. as the offensive fulcrum of the team. We know he's going to be the offensive fulcrum. We don't know how that's going to work. I feel pretty confident that it's not going to be by just posting him up 13 times a game again and being way more than any other guy in the league. Like, it's going to be different
yeah.
than it was than it was last year or really any time in the past.
And the thing that I do think excites me about that Nikola Jokic role, not to say it's going to be that same role, because it's not going to be the same exact thing. They're,
right.
Like, Carl is better at different things than Jokic, and Jokic is better at different things than Carl. But it does excite me a little bit that Carl, I thought, at least grew considerably as a passer last year. From year three to year four, he became much better of a passer. Now, his assist numbers jumped from, like, 2.4 to 3.4, so it's yeah. nothing, like, crazy.
What did those passes look like on the floor?
In terms of like
where was he and where were the passes going?
I thought he threw some good passes out of a double team on the block, and I thought he threw good passes from up around the elbow lesser.
But more so on the block, right?
Yes.
And so, yeah, I agree with you.
I thought he did a terrific job finding the weak side corner from the block.
Exactly.
I thought that was the one area passing-wise where I'm like, okay, you are – much better than the Karl Anthony. And I didn't watch nearly as much Karl Anthony Towns year three as I did year four because I didn't cover this team. Why would I?
Yeah.
So I thought that that was the one area that jumped off the floor to me that I thought he did a much better job.
I'm just saying that's what's – I feel pretty confident in saying that's not going to be the main way he's used as the fulcrum of the offense. So how much does that matter?
No, but I think the fact that he's got the vision and the ability to do it can translate to a different spot on the floor.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think it's such a different – it's such a different element to be – I'm not saying he can't. I think it's just a really different element to be catching – because there's so much more to do if you catch it at the nail and you're squared.
Yeah.
Right? Then I mean, when you're on the block with it there, it's read, feel the double, and hit the pass. And if not, he just goes to your hook. I mean, it's a quarterback. It's a much more basic offense.
Yeah.
In that situation when he's going to have a handful of reads. And – Carl is a great offensive player, and he's a great player overall. His biggest weakness as a player is his ability to read the floor at this juncture of his career.
Yeah.
And you know, he's older. He's going to improve more. He's going to have more opportunities. I'm interested to see. I'm not saying you're wrong. I don't know. I'm interested to see how well that vision translates from the block to the nail.
I think it's something we're going to learn about early. Yeah. I think it's going to be something early in the season that we see. But I think that having that vision and being able to make those passes that he could not make earlier in his career will translate at least a little bit to another spot in the floor.
It's an easy place to get fancy.
It is. And, you know, and let me say this.
When he gets fancy, he gets messy.
After last season, I am more confident with him shifting to a different spot on the floor than I would have been after his third year.
That's a good point. I agree with that. When I said it was a tie, the other part... and I think if I had to choose, I would say this is more important, is to see how he operates defensively.
Yeah.
Like schematically, and you and I have talked about this before, but the obviously the Tibbs system that asked him to drop back to the rim as, you know, as a defender in the same way that KG did, the same way that Joakim Noah did in Boston and Chicago. I mean, that's what he was asked to do, and Cat was objectively bad at that.
Yeah.
They've been 25th in defensive rating.
He's not built
worse
for that.
Well, physically... he is, but mentally he hasn't been.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't natural for them. I mean, he's not like, doesn't have some sort of basketball learning
it's
disability.
It's just not who he is.
And I think, and why it's going to be sweet to have Covington back is because we had those 11 games when Covington was healthy right away afterwards. And to Tibbs' credit, he changed the defensive scheme like that. Boom.
Yeah.
And he said, nope, Cat, you're not dropping back. If it's Covington at the point of attack, we feel confident in sending the both of you to hard hedge or attack that screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was awesome. It was awesome. And I think, obviously they've looked, and David Vanderpool is running the defense, has looked that over and over. But David Vanderpool comes from Portland, where he ran Tibbs' the same thing, the drop scheme with Nurkic. And it's, that's what I'm excited to see.
Yeah.
I mean, are you gonna keep asking Cat to be a dropping big and read and react defensively, or are you going to unleash him and say, attack the perimeter? And I think we would learn a lot more from him attacking the perimeter, but then I start thinking about the back line and I go, okay, so now Cat's out here attacking the pick and roll with the Kogi or Covington or whatever, and swing, and it's Jake Layman defending the rim.
Yeah.
You know, right? Like it's the inherent other side of the coin, the negative side of the coin, I would argue, of the advantage that you get from being smaller and faster offensively is now if you're asking Cat to be more aggressive, you just lose that girth in the paint. You lose that height in the paint. And it's why my anticipation is I think it'll be a mix of the two, but I think it'll be a lot more drop scheme and be a lot more similar to what he did last year than it will be anything new. But again, to be determined.
Yeah, that's, again, something I'm excited to see. And it's...
defensive rating. Guess their defensive rating this year.
Guess their...
rank.
Oh, rank. I'll say 17.
I was going to say 16, yeah.
Okay.
But I feel like it's kind of optimistic.
I think it is optimistic, but I think they'll be better.
I think they'll be better at executing.
I believe in David Vanderpool.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in him. I think that what he's going to be able to do here... Why do you say 16?
I think if we're going to see a change in this team on the floor... it's going to be that they better execute whatever the vision is they choose. And obviously we're somewhat confused about exactly how they're going to do this. We think we're going to be fast.
Still in the dark, yep.
Yeah, but I do believe that they're going to be better at executing, and that's so much of what defense is. And they were so poor. They've been so poor at that, particularly the second half of last season. Injuries, whatever. They didn't execute. Like, they did not execute defensively, and it's why they've been a bottom six defense every year of Cat's career.
Yeah.
And that just to me is like, well, you got to make a big jump because you're 25th in defensive rating, even when you had Jimmy Butler for the whole year when they made the playoffs. They're 25th in defensive rating.
Mm-hmm.
And is that a fair representation where they actually maybe defensive rating isn't a perfect metric where they 20th or 21st or something like that? I don't know. They've definitely been a bottom third of the league defensive team. And so for us to say we think they're going to be about league average, that's huge. And I think that requires not only execution, but Cat taking another big step forward defensively.
Yeah, and I do think that the step forward he took last year, I think he found himself in the right place at the right time more often mm-hmm. than he had before, and the execution still wasn't as good as it needs to be, but it's a step, if yeah, nothing
no,
else.
I think he was in the right place starting to execute better, but once there was two or three reads in the middle of a defensive set, he struggled, as he kind of always had in that capacity. But for the people who, like, you know, come in and say Cat's the same defender he was his whole career, he's one of the worst defensive centers in the league, that's just patently false.
Yeah. He has evolved.
Absolutely. He's so much of a better defender than he was before. Does that make him the 15th best defensive center in the NBA? No, probably not. But it's better. It's light years better than it was Tibbs' first year.
Yeah.
When he came in, and it was a definite red mark on the team. And so could he make another sizable jump in that way? Maybe. Covington will help.
Yeah, Covington will help. He's probably the person I'm most excited to watch play basketball again because it's been so long.
Like
It was New Year's Eve was the last time we saw him. He's certainly one of my three players that I'm
he's
most
got fun factor too.
Yeah, he is fun to watch. It's fun to see how his presence alone changes the game, and mm-hmm. he can make defensive plays for the Wolves that just no one else can. Like there was the one play against Houston when he went up and just kind of stole the ball from Clint Capella at the rim,
awesome.
And no one else on the roster can dream of doing that. Mm-hmm. And that's something that the Wolves really miss. And not to say that changes the outcome of the season because they're still not a playoff team with him.
No, but it's so connected to that type of defensive play is so connected to getting out on the break offensively and like running a fun brand of up pace, you know, fast break basketball where you're getting dunks and you're getting easy buckets and everyone's high fiving each other and you're all of a sudden on a 14-2 run. Like though that type of play from Covington, it's absolutely contagious.
Yeah, they didn't have enough of that, I would say, after Ryan took over. It didn't exist.
It was weird. Remember that second unit was awesome.
Oh, they steamrolled teams.
And it just completely, you remove Covington from that equation of that second unit, mm-hmm. and it was a mess.
Well, and another part of it was the point guard situation got down to Jared Bayless and Jared Terrell.
Right.
And which I don't
neither of which are in the NBA.
Yeah.
This year.
I don't know where Jared Terrell is. I know Jared Bayless went to China. I haven't seen.
I think I'm assuming. I know Terrell hasn't signed anywhere, but I mean, G League, or I think he's staying around.
I mean,
locally.
That's who he is, but Terrell, and China is where careers end. Once you go to China, you don't come back. It's very rare you come back.
You get paid, though.
Unless there is a lockout, if you go to China, you don't come back.
Joe Johnson just signed today.
only a partial guarantee, though. He went to the big three.
Beasley.
Well, he actually never technically signed the deal with them, I guess.
Oh, so Beasley? Oh, I didn't read that.
Well, yeah, because they're now not going to sign because they signed Joe Johnson. But the 2011, if Detroit had this roster in 2011, they'd be a threat. Could you imagine the Miami Heat against the Detroit Pistons with Blake Griffin, Derrick Rose, and Joe Johnson?
Drummond? Yeah. I think that team's that'll be a team that I haven't watched as much in past years that I'll be watching more. I mean, I personally enjoyed watching Derrick Rose, but Blake Griffin was so good last year. Like,
I know.
Although my
favorite thing, and I mentioned this on Tuesday's podcast too, one of the Detroit Pistons fan sites, I don't know if it was Fansided
Piston
or SB
Powered.
Nation, one of them
wrote
an article like, what would it take for Detroit Pistons guard Derrick Rose to win Sixth Man of the Year? I'm like, I don't know, play 75 games maybe? Not get hurt?
Yeah. He is. That will be, I mean, I think for both of us, it'll be one of the, like, 10 years from now when you're thinking about the, some of the most interesting people you covered.
Yeah.
I mean, just because of the like, bifurcation of
well,
the...
Well, who's
the,
on that list for you? And I, so I got his publisher sent me his book. I haven't read it yet, but I have Derrick Rose's book. That
I mean,
was, that he wrote this offseason.
So you've covered Milwaukee, Cleveland, and the Wolves now, right?
Yes.
Those are the three NBA teams.
Yeah.
I mean, I've only been in Minnesota, but it was the Tibbs era. So we got, obviously you got Jimmy.
Yeah.
Which was unique. And I mean, Jimmy and Derrick are unique in their own sort of like pre-established, and then also just really interesting personalities for the both of them. And then Andrew is, I think, a fascinating like character in just who, I mean, first overall pick, not a mean streak in him, like from a, just a, as a person.
No, great dude.
Yeah. And it's fascinating to see the way he's like blocked off so much of the world, to focus on himself. I actually kind of commend that.
Yeah.
But it's very rare for a first overall pick. And then Cat, man, like, he, if Cat does, and I really think he will end up being like a top five player in the NBA for a handful of years. Like, he'll be a guy who makes, I don't know, like seven all NBA teams or something in his career. I mean,
he's
that's
a Hall of Famer.
He will be a superstar, and he has one of the most interesting superstar personalities that, I mean, you can put together. And I think largely in a positive way, but he's just kind of, he's just shaped in a way that's so different from what we perceive so many of the stars to be like. And you can almost see him wanting to emulate what some of the other stars are, but it's just not,
but he's
exactly
different.
Yeah.
It's not who he is.
And you know, I actually hope he holds on to like a lot of that and doesn't, you know, feel so much of the pressure to like prove he's something that Jimmy didn't think he was or whatever. Like, be who you are, you know, be who
let
you are.
Let that stuff go.
Let that stuff go. Be who you are. Dominate in your own lane, you know?
Yeah.
And that's, I think that'll be another guy we look back and be like, wow, the progression of who, not only who Cat became as a basketball player, but as a person is really interesting. I think I've been fortunate to cover a weird group. Jamal Crawford too. I'll throw him in there. He was cool.
Yeah, he was. I didn't cover Jamal, but I've met Jamal before, and
he's the man.
Dude. Yeah. Strange. I mean, I covered Larry Sanders for like a week and a half in Cleveland.
That was
an interesting week.
I'm trying to think.
I remember I talked to him on Snapchat, like as soon as he signed. Like, I messaged back and forth with Larry Sanders on Snapchat when I was in Cleveland.
So weird.
And then he was like there for, I covered his first game. He wasn't supposed to play. The Cavs blew somebody out there, but like 27 in the fourth quarter. So Tyronn Lue put him in for like 3 minutes at the end of the game. And then he was late to a team flight and kind of never seen him again.
And you also had Kevin Love like in the midst of hardship, personal hardship as we understand it now. Like, I wasn't around here when, I mean, I lived in Minnesota, so, you know.
You weren't around
from
the team.
Distance. I wasn't around the team when Kevin was here, but he seems like an interesting capacity, very different than Larry Sanders, but
yes,
an interesting person too.
He really opened up after they won. Like, it felt like, and I know that he has been a mental health advocate. It felt like there was a huge weight lifted off of his shoulder after they won a title.
So, interesting. I just, like, I wonder how much of that was his own personal progression in his life, or how much it was actually just tied to the success.
I think it was a mix of both.
Right. Yeah.
And then also like that Kyrie Irving guy that everyone thinks is insane was in that locker room too.
Right.
There were some characters in that Cavs locker room, because aside from that, like, I haven't mentioned J.R. Smith yet. How many locker rooms could I name three guys that were interesting and J.R. Smith not be one of them?
Absolutely.
Oh, and LeBron. Like, There was a rapper on the team and Amon Shumpert. There were some stories. And then even last year covering 2 years ago now, covering the Milwaukee Bucks, Jabari Parker, when he was fighting his way back from injury, which is a really, really difficult thing to do. And I genuinely feel bad that his career hasn't worked out the way he wanted it to. But he essentially got benched during their first round series against the Boston Celtics two years ago that they lost in seven games. And then he told us after the game that the reason that he got benched was because the coach didn't like him. Joe Prunty was the interim coach at the time because Jason Kidd was fired halfway through the season. Then obviously they hired Mike Budenholzer after the season was over. He essentially told the media that he was benched because coach didn't like him. Coach Joe Prunty did not like him. And then the next game, that was game three. The next game, he came off the bench and played really well. Like, he played the best half of basketball Jabari Parker has ever played in his life. And then after the game, he did not talk to us. He looked at us and goes, PR guy said I can't talk today, guys. Said I'm not allowed to talk. Funny. So that was my best Buck story.
That's sweet. It is an underrated, or maybe it's not underrated. It's just it's a cool part of the job to be able to, I mean, it's not like we're like buddies with them. I mean, I don't know. No. You're talking to them on Snapchat, but just kind
of. That was just trying to get in touch with the new guy.
Right, right, right.
Like, hey, I'll see you around.
I don't think that'll be the way I contact Jake Clayman this year.
No.
it is. We think about these guys so much about, you know, the way they produce or don't produce and define them by their win shares per 48 minutes and all that. But it's been cool, I could say for myself, and just being able to have the curtain slightly peel back just from the, you know, the times when we're around the team, no microphones on or anything like that, just kind of coexisting. And for me, it was really cool just kind of knowing Tyus Jones. I'm from Minneapolis. He's from Minneapolis or Minnesota, and kind of just that mutual connection in that sort of way. And again, I'm not pretending we're friends with them, but it's you like kind of colleagues
you can relate.
In a way.
Well, no, you can
I know,
relate
yeah,
a little bit.
And you're just around them. Yeah, it was. I don't know. It's a cool part of the job. I'm excited to see what that's like with dudes like Jordan Bell this year, or you know, Noah Vonleh, whatever it might be. And
yeah,
see. Because I do believe that, like for Noah Vonleh, I think so much of however he mentally approaches this season will dictate his success. Like because he turned down a multi-year deal, signed a one-year deal so he could get back on the market, right? So obviously, part of that thinking has to be trying to have a big year so as to get a fatter paycheck, a longer-term deal down the road.
Yeah.
Now, if that's driving your thinking, that's driving your play.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and I also think that's something we'll be able to see.
We'll learn about.
We'll be able to see right away. So it's interesting, the fusion of how that all, you know, comes together, and then how the personalities on this 15-man roster of guys who are literally from all over the world that all just live together basically for 7 months or whatever, like how they match.
It is crazy how it happens. And that leads, have you watched any of the FIBA World Cup?
A little bit.
Any of it? It's
not a morning person.
No, neither am I. I haven't watched the last two games, so I haven't seen both teams. Team USA's losses, but it's interesting to see that team just not play well.
Well, like, and then because the other side of that is
the rest of the world's caught up.
Well, the rest of the world, and well, at least and the fusion. Like this, I'm talking about like that personality fusion is like so clearly there with a team like France or
Spain.
Australia. I mean, even Serbia lost, but like the same thing.
Well, they beat the United States this morning,
right? Yeah, I mean, they
were up 32-7 after the first quarter.
Really, that was scoring,
and then they ended up winning by five. Like, the United States
came back,
which was kind of impressive considering they've been eliminated. It's like a consolation game, kind of who cares.
Yeah.
They were down 32-5 after the first quarter, and they came back and cut it to three at one point and lost by five.
Man, that'll be – I wonder how the Stars will react, you know, come the Olympics.
I'm also curious who's going to be on that team in the Olympics.
Right.
I'm curious who from this roster right now is actually playing in the Olympics, because I don't think we're going to see many names.
Donovan Mitchell?
Maybe. I mean, if James Harden wants to be there, James Harden's going to be there instead of Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, but they take a handful of guys. I mean,
we'll see.
But yeah, their kind of skill sets are duplicitous. You know,
if Steph Curry wants to be there, Steph Curry's going to be there.
Right, over Kemba.
If LeBron wants to be there, LeBron's going to be there.
Yeah, no, that's true. I don't know. It's for as much as obviously I like basketball and follow basketball. How I've never been like a huge international.
Sure.
I probably should be. I don't know.
I don't ever watch the EuroLeague or anything, but like I'll watch FIBA if the United States.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And I'll certainly watch the Olympics.
I actually like in retrospect like wish. What I wish it had was like it was on League Pass or something where I could go back and
not
like
at 7:30 Central Time in the morning.
Right, that would help too.
I do also wish Carl were eligible for Team USA.
I was thinking about that so much this year. I was like,
man, that if he would have been on that team, he would have been the guy,
yes.
easy, because
yeah.
he's definitely the best player of that group.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have gone through him. And what did that team lack? Size. Like they
lack size and shooting. The things Carl's good at.
The two things, yeah. And that, I think it could have been, honestly, like the shift we saw in KD, right? After
yeah.
he was kind of became like the guy for that Team USA that was at 2010 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden it was like that happened. And then KD is,
took a leap.
Like a leap.
And that was, I mean.
And just like a. The belief in him, because Carl gets all this disrespect. Like,
and that's not just the Team USA thing. And obviously, Carl can't play for Team USA because he's played for the Dominican in international competition before, so he's ineligible. He is classified as a Dominican.
Yeah.
But like we've seen that in, if you, and this is going 13 years back, the 06 Argentinian team that was led by Manu Ginobili, he took a huge leap after that because he found that confidence. Like someone they're talking about is Frank Ilikina. Doing that because he's been great for France.
Right, right. That's crazy.
But that's your international basketball minute. So.
It is. So I'm just thinking about like exposure for Cat. I mean, we know he's a great player, and I think he'll be even better this year than he was last. Like, that's just a natural progression. I'm interested to see how this 82 game season impacts his perception, you know, amongst the rest of the league. There aren't going to be the national TV games. It's the one, right? Like,
I believe they have one ESPN game and like, five NBA TV games, maybe?
Yeah,
four,
which
five,
I don't even count NBA TV.
I don't count them either. I finally got NBA TV, though.
There you go. It's, I don't know. I think it's also kind of dumb how that, I get it, I guess, that that's the exposure and what kind of makes guys a bigger deal than they are. But it stinks for him.
He's going to
that
be
he
the
doesn't get more exposure.
He's
going to
be the league's best kept secret this year.
Yeah, I think he already is. It was cool to see in the SI Top 100 that they had him over Gobert. I mean, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And I also agree with him being behind Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic. But basically, it requires someone like Rob Mahoney, who's literally tapped into all 30 teams, to be like, actually, hold on. This is the best offensive big man in the NBA.
Yeah.
It just is. Like, we're not going to crown him. We're not going to put him in the top 10.
No.
Because there's issues there, and defensively and there's question marks with Cat, but you know, to be 13th, that's what he deserves. You know, he deserves to be at least that. And it's just he needs like a bigger microphone, you know, to be able to, so people, because I don't know how many people are gonna be tuning in to watch Cat and Noah Vonleh play this year on League Pass.
I will.
Me too. Well, we'll be there. We'll be there.
Home games. That's Dane Moore. I'm Danny Cunningham. This has been Raised by Wolves. Follow Dane on Twitter at DaneMooreNBA. I'm at Real D Cunningham. You can get the podcast on the Score North app, scorenorth.com, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to check us out there. We will talk to you next time.